Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A win against gerrymandering in the state of Ohio. We now have a date for the next union election at Amazon. Labor's MLK agenda for this weekend. And today on the show, the Plasters and Cement Masons, as well as the United Auto Workers. Welcome to the Thursday, January 13th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. Yeah, there's a lot of ways you can access this show. We have two guests today. Joe Chockey will be our first guest. He's been on before, and he comes to us from the Operative Plasters and Cement Masons International Association Union. Website is opcmia.org. He'll run down what the organization is all about, what they do. He covers four states. In fact, he started in Cleveland, Ohio, 42 years ago, working as a teenager in a family-owned union subcontractor concrete business, became a skilled cement mason by trade, and now he's an international rep for the organization. And we'll check into those four states, Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, as well as West Virginia. We'll talk about their apprenticeship training programs, and where he sees the craft going. Right now, there's a lot of work in the construction field. We'll touch on that and also delve into the history of this organization. You ready for this? This is the oldest building and construction trades union in the country. The roots go back to 1864 during the American Civil War, when an organization known as the National Plasters Union, or the National Plasters Organization, began to unify the various local craft unions that represented workers in the trade. Get this, the new union, I mean, we're going back way back into history here. They endorsed the 8-hour day movement while pledging to avoid, quote, unnecessary strikes, and instituted apprenticeship training and regulations. The union amended its constitution in 1887 to include workers from Canada. Today, the organization continues to live by the principles upon which it was founded and which will continue to be its strength in the future. And Joe will touch on that as well. How to get in and the opportunities available. There are many. And that goes across all trades, no doubt about that. Desiree Hoffman will be joining us later in the show. She comes to us from the United Auto Workers, one of the many proud sponsors of the show. And we'll get an update on the tax credits for electric vehicles. Last couple of segments that we've had with Desiree, more and more people are lobbying on behalf of the American auto industry, and I'm talking about the union-sponsored auto industry, GM, Ford, and the company that used to be Chrysler, Stellantis or something like that. They changed their name. And they want to boost the tax credits like an extra $7,500. It's my understanding that Josh Nassar, who is the boss for Desiree, was testifying on Capitol Hill yesterday, so we'll get an update on that. UAW doing a lot of organizing, too. We've been touching on that on various shows. The other issue is voter rights, and it's so timely because we're going into the weekend where we're going to commemorate the birth of Dr. Martin Luther King, who is all about civil rights and voting rights. And this week, you might have caught Joe Biden, President Biden, delivering a very powerful speech. This was on Tuesday, urging the Senate to amend the filibuster and enact legislation protecting voting rights. Throughout the speech, he deemed this to be a defining moment in American history and declared that the threat to our democracy is so grave that Congress must find a way to pass these voting rights bills. Now, there's two of them. The Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. He blasted the Senate as a shell of its former self due to the filibusters having been weaponized and abused, and professed his support for changing the Senate rules whichever way they need to be changed. Now, I want to stop right there, because what needs to be done, a lot of people know this, we got to get the Democrats on board. We got Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, who are not on board. Manchin is moving in the right direction. Sinema, nobody knows where she's standing. But after the speech, Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, tweeted that the Senate is going to move right away. Now, here comes the opposition. Lindsey Graham, Republican out of South Carolina, called voter suppression a manufactured issue. And Georgia's Governor Brian Kemp claimed that the repressive law recently enacted in his state, which, among other things, slashed the period during which voters may request an absentee ballot, virtually eliminated drop boxes and mobile voting centers, imposed very strict ID requirements, and even outlawed offering food or water to voters waiting in line. You know, with all that being said, Kemp went on to say, we're making it easier for people to vote. Yeah, right. Well, labor is doing a lot to push this, and this is a big weekend. Here's a comment from Liz Shuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and she said advancing voting rights is how we defend America against those who want to tear workers apart. Mobilizing on voting rights is also how we can take on the filibuster, which has been used for generations to block progress for workers. The timing of our MLK conference this weekend could not be better. And if you go to the AFL-CIO website, you can sign up. It's going to be virtual. And there's also a website you can click on to push the Senate to change the filibuster. And there's toolkits, all kind of information. Just go to aflcio.org. And this conference is going to be Sunday and Monday, the 16th and the 17th. And they really beefed this up, too. Number of speakers: Kamala Harris, the vice president, Senator Raphael Warnock, and John Ossoff, both from Georgia. Judge Greg Mathis is going to be there. Actor Blair Underwood. Tom Morello, oh my God, great musician. He is going to perform, among other people. And I want to salute a number of the sponsors here, including Ulico, Union Plus, American Income Life, LIUNA, our presenting sponsor, National Nurses United, Food and Commercial Workers, and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Again, that's this weekend. You can get more information by going to aflcio.org. And Desiree Hoffman is going to give us the UAW perspective on this as our second guest on the show. Well, the Ohio Supreme Court, whoa, did they make a powerful announcement yesterday. They struck down the new Republican-drawn state legislative maps that were supposed to take effect for the primary election in May. It was a 4-3 ruling, and it gives the Ohio Redistricting Commission 10 days, that's it, to draw new maps. Chief Justice Maureen O'Connell, who's a Republican, was seen as the swing vote on the case, and she was. She joined Justices Jennifer Bruner, Melody Stewart, and Michael Donnelly, all Democrats, in striking down the maps. Stewart wrote the majority opinion. Republican Justice Sharon Kennedy wrote the dissenting opinion. And get this, Justice DeWine's father, the governor, Governor Mike DeWine, voted for the maps as a member of the Ohio Redistricting Commission. And there is a move that he should recuse himself. He said, not a big deal. I'm not going to do that. So this is the state legislative maps. And under those maps, the Republicans we're expected to win 66% of the state legislative seats compared to the Republicans' 54% of the statewide vote. That's why it was ruled unconstitutional, because voters twice went on the ballot and said, you know what, you gotta make this more Democratic. Make it more fair. Not necessarily Democratic, as you think I'm talking about a party, but make them more fair. And that's exactly how the ruling went yesterday. The regional director of Region 10 of the National Labor Relations Board issued a notice this week setting a date for the rerun union election at the Amazon warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama. According to the notice, the election will begin February 4th, when the NLRB will mail ballots to all employees in the bargaining unit, and the votes will be counted on March 28th. The election will be conducted once again via secret ballot by mail. Now, the nearly 6,000 workers at the Bessemer facility made national and international headlines early last year when they voted in the first union election in Amazon history. And though the retail, wholesale, and department store union lost by a vote of 1,798 to 738, the NLRB ordered a second election after finding that Amazon had interfered with the employees' exercise of a free and reasoned choice and made a free and fair election impossible by convincing the post office. This is crazy. Every time I read this, they convinced the post office to install a mailbox right outside the warehouse entrance, creating the impression that the company was monitoring the voting process. Now, the retail workers, they're not jumping up and down right now. They're excited about this. Don't get me wrong. But history shows that unions tend to lose rerun elections. And they expressed that in a statement. They said that they were deeply concerned that Amazon would continue its objectionable behavior in the new election and complained that the labor board had declined to order a number of remedies proposed by the union that could have made the process fair for workers. That's interesting. We're going to touch on this and more tomorrow in our show with Joyce Goldstein. That's our noted labor attorney. She monitors just about everything that comes out of the National Labor Relations Board. And we'll get some really insightful comments from her on this going forward. All right, we're going to break. When we come back, the Cement Masons and Joe Chockey, guy that covers four states, plasters and cement masons, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at afge.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment. You can find more at ulagency.org, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce. Let's go to our live line right now and welcome back to the show, Joe Chockey. Joe is with the Operative Plasters and Cement Masons International Union. Website is opcmia.org. And he's been a member for 42 years. Started working as a teenager in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Joe, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today. How are we doing today, brother?
Hi, Ed. Doing well. Glad to be back. And I hope you're all doing well as well.
Good, good. You had a good holiday and all that?
Oh, yes, sir, Ed, with the family and grandchildren running around. House was loud, and that's the way we like it.
Loud and proud. I like that. Very good. Joe now lives in Columbus, Ohio, big sports fan, big family guy. And I want to talk to you first about, you know, just refresh our listeners. You've been on before, but you got involved in the cement mason business as a teenager. And I guess, what was it, because your family was in that business? Why don't you talk about that part again?
Yes, Ed. Great opportunities growing up in the 70s in Cleveland. My family decided to venture out. My dad, my uncles, and some cousins started a union sub-concrete contractor business up there. I went to work for them in the summertime during my high school years. And then after graduation, I worked full-time for the company. So I was welcomed with great opportunities, learning from some of the best mechanics I knew.
And I take it you got involved in the apprenticeship program once you started getting into the trade. You wanted to learn more. Can you kind of lay that out for us, how that worked for you?
Yes, Ed, I traveled around. I ended up settling down in Columbus, Ohio. And at the time, that was with Local Union 536. I got involved as the recording secretary of the union, and they asked me to be the apprenticeship instructor. So back in 88, I started teaching classes. I really enjoyed and still do enjoy working with students and bringing them up to be mechanics and to make a career for themselves. Since I did that, I continued moving on with the union to where now I'm an international rep, and I oversee some of the unions in my four states here. And they all have great, proud apprenticeship programs, and we're very proud of that.
See, I see you cover what Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. So you're like a regional guy then? And is this a typical position with the plasters and cement masons?
Yes, it is. There's representatives around the country, and we give assistance as we can or as needed to help unions stay proud and strong and meet with contractors and continue moving forward. So, yes, I do cover these regions and just offer to help as needed.
Joe, talk to me about the apprenticeship program, how many years it is, and how you're reaching out to get more young people involved. Talk to me about that part.
Well, Ed, we offer local unions with apprenticeship programs in my region. We offer them in the cities of Toledo, Cleveland, Akron, Youngstown, Columbus, Cincinnati, Dayton, and Portsmouth in Ohio. We also offer them in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Parkersburg and Charleston, West Virginia, and Detroit and Flint and Lansing, Michigan as well. To get into those programs, I would say contact your local union and they'll get you interested and fill out the needed paperwork to join the programs. Once you make that contact, you must be 18 years of age, must have a driver's license and be able to get around and be a responsible individual. Most of our programs are either a 3 or a 4 year program, depending on the craft and depending on the area. And when I talk as craft, we represent operative plasters as well as cement masons. There is no cost to the individual to get involved with our apprenticeship classes. You actually earn while you learn. And what I mean by that is you're working in the field with contractors and you're getting paid. That is considered on-the-job training. We also will follow that up with classroom training that you have to meet so many hours in the classroom training. These are state bona fide apprenticeship programs that are put together through collective bargaining agreements. Apprentice programs are college accredited programs. You receive credit hours towards a college degree if you want to further your career in a different avenue of the construction industry. Our local union, International, has actually invested in some virtual reality machinery. We offer these machines distributed around the country. They're used at trade shows, at high schools. Students and adults can use them to observe some of our types of work under the 3D hood. And we also use those virtual reality machineries for training purposes. We plan to continue developing those to offer more realistic skills of our particular trades. And that's really all it takes to get into the apprenticeship program. The economy is booming, and we'd like to get as many students in class as we can.
Well, you got me kind of interested in this virtual reality part, and I'm thinking you go, and that's definitely the way to get young people, because when they put on those headsets and those sunglasses, they look like sunglasses, and you can see you got like 3D. Is this something you just started? And I'm just wondering how effective that is, especially for young people.
Well, thanks for asking that. Actually, it's very effective. It's been out for about a year now, and our international has been involved with this for a couple of years of getting all the everything in line, getting everything correct to operate them. As a matter of fact, I have been involved with our international on committees to travel around at these trade shows to offer that. I will be at the World of Concrete that will be next week in Las Vegas, and we do set up our operative plaster cement masons booth where we have a riding double trowel machine under the virtual reality hood, as well as a spray-on fireproofing that falls under the plasters trade. And big time events, people come by, you can get a line up for a long time. When we get into high schools and give these kids more of a realistic view of what our types of works are. So we continue to grow on our virtual reality, we think, and it is obviously a thing of the future to attract the younger generation. But more than that, it gives a realistic experience for anyone sitting under the hood to really see what some of our types of work are.
That's awesome. That is cool. So there's a trade show coming up. You mentioned the World of Concrete. Now, is this something they do on a yearly basis? And I'm sure with 40 plus years in the field, you've gone to many of these trade shows, right?
Yes, I enjoy the World of Concrete. That goes on every year. They're typically in Las Vegas under contract, and it brings people in from all over the United States and actually all over the world. I've talked to people from Australia and other parts of the country that come to this event. A very big trade organization, a movement there that gets everybody involved with the latest technologies, things to buy at these shows. There's also other shows that come up in Canada, as well as Florida. All these trade shows, our international association certainly tries to stay involved the best we could and to bring our newest virtual reality around to let everybody experience it.
Joe, if you don't mind, can you explain the concrete of today versus the concrete of yesterday? I know there's some changes. I know contractors are using it in different ways. I see like poured foundations, things of that nature. Can you shed some light on that? Give us some more details on how the construction industry is using concrete today?
Thanks, Ed. The concrete industry, to me, is such an amazing industry. I've always appreciated every asset of it, whether it's the engineer, the worker, the architect. I mean, there's so much that goes into structure of a building. The concrete, it continues to change. It's a changing world. Technology changes. Concrete now, they pour concrete in styrofoam forms that will hold. They tend to use those around a lot of hotels and and things like that, where the concrete's actually poured in the styrofoam forms, and you have your R value with the styrofoam. The beauty of concrete, if you've ever been to places like Las Vegas, and you see what they do with concrete stamping and coloring and Shot Creek, and they make these mountains. You go to zoos, you can see mountains, stonery, things like that. The concrete industry is forever changing. Right now, one of the biggest things is revamping old structures. You see this a lot in your General Motor plants or Chrysler plants up in Michigan and that. It's called polishing floors. They actually have polishers to grind the old surface off the existing concrete, and it brings a new luster, a new shine to the floor, and the chemicals that go on top of it create a sheen and a value of the reflection edge. So concrete is always a changing industry. There's always engineers working on developing new ways, and then the technology comes with it as well, which is part of a cement mason's needs, is to understand the mixed designs, the product materials, the technology. It's forever changing. Being a cement mason myself, I always look at things like that, what it looks like, what it feels like, because it's always an attraction.
The concrete of today is not the concrete of yesterday. I'm learning everything on this show. I love that kind of stuff. Joe, I need to take a quick break. Can you stay with us for another segment here?
Yes, sir.
Joe Chachi is his name. He comes to us from the Operative Plasters and Cement Masons International Association Union. That's OPCMIA.org. Desiree Hoffman will be joining us from the United Auto Workers, and you are listening to America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's L-I-U-N-A.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we're available on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings. Learning a whole lot about plaster and concrete. Well, I think we got the concrete down. Joining us on our live line is Joe Chachi from the Operative Plasters and Cement Masons International Union, OPCMIA.org, one of the, if not the oldest building and construction trades union in the country. Joe, I was reading this from your website, the national website. Roots go back to 1864 during the American Civil War. Now, what's interesting, I guess during that time, plaster was the craft. And it's interesting because cement masons have allied with plasterers. Can we get into that? And I that's got to be a really, really, really skilled craft. And I'm sure you cover that in detail in the apprenticeship programs. But the plaster part, can you fill in the blanks here on the training that goes in to make someone skilled in that line of work?
Yes, thank you, Ed. Plaster work is very interesting, as it does date back to 1864. Back then, they didn't have a drywall, things like we know today, plastic that makes molds and that. Everything back in the day, and to some point to this day still, was cementitious material, plaster work. In today's market, you'll see our plasters work doing exterior stucco and systems called EFIS, that's insulation as well as cementitious coatings over it. They do culture stone, hard coat interior plaster walls, Venetian coatings over drywall, cast molds to make chair rails or crown molding on ceilings, prefab walls that look like stone or brick, restoration work of old cementitious plaster interior walls, such as if you get to the State House and places like that. Those buildings were all built with cementitious interior walls. Spray-on fireproofing. Spray-on fireproofing is a product that actually protects the high-rise or many buildings in case of a fire. The cementitious fireproofing keeps the fire from spreading throughout a building. They take a wet cementitious product and they turn it into a finished product or a sculpture. When I say sculpture, Ed, if you go to Hollywood, we actually have plasters that work on the scenes at Hollywood to develop the background settings. Very interesting, and it's very pleasurable to talk to these people that do this type of work. So our plaster work and cement mason work beautifies places like Las Vegas or casinos or zoos, and certainly Hollywood. The plaster trade is a trade that's been around a long, long, long time.
Joe, I notice, especially in restoring many of the older buildings, theaters, I've seen that in the Cleveland area, you're probably familiar with Playhouse Square, those ceilings, when they renovated them. Boy, I tell you, that takes a really, really skilled craftsperson to do that kind of stuff, and that's where your trade comes in, right?
Well, yes, I do. That's very nice you said that. When you look at those molds on those ceilings, those are actually molds that don't take a piece of artwork that's on them ceilings. They'll cast a mold out of that, and then they'll remake them with plaster material and put them back into place. That is such a skill and a need, and that's where your apprenticeship programs come in, because as these older gentlemen and women retire, you have to teach that where you don't lose that. And that is such a skilled trade to do work like that. And then when you get into structures and buildings like that, and we look up at the ceilings and you're just in awe at it, that is actually work of plasters that really know how to re-renovate those type of projects, ceilings, walls. It's just an amazing process if you stand back and watch it happen. And I said earlier, I always appreciate even down to the craftsmen that do the work, how much goes into construction.
It's a masterpiece. It really is when you take a look at the finished product. One more question here, Joe, before you go. We've got this infrastructure bill. There's a lot of building going on all across America, and I'm just wondering your assessment for the future here. You indicated that there's opportunities. The apprenticeship programs seem to be attracting a number of people. We could always use more. But with this infrastructure bill, and I'm hearing this from various sources, that some of these projects, they may not have enough skilled labor to get them done on time. And then, you know, you've got the supply chain issues and that. I'm just wondering, what's your take on the future when it comes to all this?
Ed, we are living in great times. Our economy is robust right now, booming, and you're absolutely right. There are letters that will circulate in our industry around the country, areas looking for more workers. I have sat with contractors throughout the wintertime, and that's number one. We need more workers. How do we get more workers? Even recruiting into the high schools and getting students to get into our apprentice programs. With all the work out there, not only the infrastructure bill, but the new greening, the power plants that need to be updated. The housing continues in some of these cities, roads, buildings, everything. The opportunity is right now, Ed. Baby boomers are going into retirement. We need to replenish that workforce. All the work warrants the need for more workers. It's a great time for an individual to get into a union trade and make a career out of it for themselves. It's a great time for these youths to get into the apprenticeship program. The contractors and the unions need them, and together, through a partnership, we will develop into tomorrow's workforce. The benefits of wanting to be a union, you know, you're working under a CBA, a collective bargaining agreement, and you have representation, you have good hourly pay, fringe benefits, health and welfare, pensions that will you'll receive a monthly payment until you pass away, annuity, training. Training comes at no cost to the individual. That's apprentice classes, journeyman upgrade classes that go on every year in every local union. Times are great, Ed. Times are great, and we're always looking. You know, like I said, the future is now. Get a hold of an OPCMA union hall in your area and pursue a career in our industry. Or, of course, you can visit our website at www.opcmia.org. Fill out an application online, and it will get to the local union in your area that we can get you involved. We're looking for apprentices and journeymen. Right now, Ed, right now. Great times.
Certainly a pathway to the middle class, no doubt, no doubt. Well said, my man, and this comes from a guy who spent 4 decades in the industry, Joe Chachi, representing the cement masons, plasters in Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, as well as West Virginia. Will you take care? Have fun in Las Vegas at the World of Concrete. That would be one that I want to check out someday. So enjoy that, and let's talk down the road, okay, my brother?
Thank you very much for having me on the show, man. I wish you well and have a good day.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Desiree Hoffman on behalf of the United Auto Workers.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show. Also a sponsor, I'm talking about the UAW, United Auto Workers, Desiree Hoffman, who works on Capitol Hill trying to convince lawmakers to do the right thing, which is not an easy task. Hey, Desiree, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Thanks for having me. Things are good.
Things are good at the UAW. And Josh Nasser, I understand, who you work with, who is the legislative coordinator, was on Capitol Hill yesterday trying to convince the lawmakers about the tax credit for the electric vehicles. I want to get into that, but first, voting rights. And I'll tell you, the AFL-CIO is doing a bang-up job. A lot of unions are. We had the CWA on. I know your union's involved. We got to do something about making it a little bit easier and not harder to vote. And that's exactly what has happened in, I think it's, 19 states now. There's been 400 pieces of legislation introduced since November of 2020, making it harder to vote. And it should go the other way. So talk to me about filibuster reform, because we have some good legislation that could change all this. So I'm going to let you take it from there, Desiree.
Yeah, you're exactly right. One of the go-to think tanks that you're referencing is the Brennan Center that tracks restrictive voting rights laws in state legislatures. And between January 1st and December 7th of 2021, you were mentioning, there were at least 19 states that passed 34 laws restricting access to voting. And I think one of the things I also wanted to point out that, you know, we know that these numbers are extraordinary. And the other thing is that at least 152 restrictive voting bills in 18 states will carry over into 2022, which is now, from 2021. So we're not seeing this easing up in any way, shape, or form. It's just a continuation of what's happened. And these are indicators that, you know, coupled with the ongoing mobilization around this being a big lie, this false rhetoric around voter fraud that drove unprecedented wave of voter suppression bills. So that rhetoric continues that the election was won on a lie, and that's not true at all. So the UAW has been working hard on Capitol Hill with our membership. And quite frankly, our membership doesn't need convincing. Our membership knows how important elections are. You know, it's interesting with COVID, our president of our union, President Curry, and president before him, our the previous president, told our members to vote early and vote by mail. And that really was a strong, one of the strong reasons that Democrats won in the most recent elections. And so we really need these critical reforms with voting rights legislation. And I'm happy to talk about what those bills are and then how filibuster plays a role in that.
Yeah, yeah, I want to get into them. There's two pieces of legislation here. One is the Freedom to Vote Act, and the other is the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. And I know one of them, I think the John Lewis one, would kind of fix what the Supreme Court took away from the Voting Rights Act of 1965. But I'd like to get your perspective on these. These two bills would fix what's wrong with voting in America, I take it? What do you have to say to that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So these are the twin bills that the Senate will be bringing up here. Debate's going to probably start today on these twin bills, the Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis bill. The John Lewis bill that you're referencing is a really important bill. That's the bill that, you know, would make sure that states who have a history of discrimination would have to pre-clear any changes to their voting rights voting laws to DOJ. And as you mentioned, this provision was gutted by the Supreme Court. So the goal is of this bill is to restore this key provision in the Voting Rights Act law. And clearly that's important to many communities across the country. I mean, especially communities of color where there's, you know, really clear histories of voter discrimination. And that affects many of our members, affects a lot of people. So we supported that. And then also the Freedom to Vote Act. The one thing I would say about that too is both Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema, who have shown to not always support a lot of the things that the Democrats put together, support this legislation. And that bill take some of the provisions, many of the provisions from the For the People Act, which you already know about, which passed the House several times, but it would expand voting rights It would ban partisan gerrymandering. It would promote election security and reform campaign finance laws. You know, some of the key provisions in the voting rights arena are like they're common sense reforms, like, you know, making sure that people can, you know, vote by mail, vote early, make the election day a federal holiday. There's protections against some of those unlawful purges that we saw states doing where they would purge some of the voting rolls. Online voter registration is really about modernizing our voter registration laws. Right now, you can go online and buy anything from anywhere, get it the next day. Why can't people go online and, you know, register to vote and get their voter registration card that way? I mean, to me, that's very common sense. Mm-hmm. And then automatic and same day voter registration. So there's a lot of great things in there around the Freedom to Vote Act.
Let me ask you this. Are these bills being pushed together? It sounds to me, with what you described from the Freedom to Vote Act, probably has 50 votes in the Senate. Is that right? I don't know if the other one does.
Yeah, the Freedom to Vote Act actually came out of some disagreement with Manchin and Sinema because they weren't fully on board with the For the People Act. So the Freedom to Vote Act is that negotiated bill. But the problem is, as you know, we have the 50 Democrats supporting the John Lewis bill and the Freedom to Vote Act, but you need 10 Republicans, that 60 vote threshold that all of us talk about, to overcome a filibuster. And we know that Republicans are not going to break ranks on this, which is why Leader Schumer is saying we're going to, you know, get a vote. We're going to force a vote on the voting rights bills and we'll see what happens. And we know what's going to happen. It's not going to go through because we're not going to get the 10 Republicans. So that means we need to talk about and do something around filibuster reform. And so Leader Schumer now is going to, before Monday, before MLK Day on Monday, bring a set of reforms up to reform the filibuster. And that is what we're all ready for, prepared for, and eager to see what the Senate is going to do. Because there's a number of things they can do on filibuster reform, right? And some of it's very confusing for people out there who are listening. It is confusing. Even people in D.C. don't even know what the heck is going on half the time. But they're talking about reforming some of these filibuster rules, and I'm happy to share a little bit about what I know is currently in the mix of what they're thinking.
Sure, go ahead. Tell me the story.
Yeah, so the talking filibuster. Do you remember that? Do you remember Mr. Smith Goes to Washington?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So remember, you know, back in like the 1960s and up to, I think, 1970s, you know, the minority party, as long as they're talking on the floor, you know, the bill, they would continue to be debating the bill. And if they stopped talking, that at that point, the major party, the party in power, can move to final passage of the bill, requiring only a simple majority of the votes. That would mean 51 senators. So right now in the Senate, we have 50 Democrats, 50 Republicans, and the tiebreaker is VP Harris. So under this, if they do the talking filibuster, if the Republicans, the minority party, at any point stop talking, you know, debating, then the Democrats could move for a simple majority vote on a bill. So they're talking about reviving this talking filibuster. Another thing they're talking about is simply reforming the filibuster rules, a carve out, as they would say, just for voting rights and election reform. I don't know if that's going to go anywhere, but that is something that they're talking about. So reforming the rules just simply for that election reform kind of voting. And then another thing is there's always these rules and numbers that you need to even start a debate. So they're talking about reforming the rules. Current Senate rules require 60 votes to even start debating a bill, which allows a minority party of senators to stop legislation from getting any floor consideration. So Democrats are considering a proposal that would reduce the votes needed to start debate from 60 to 50. And so that's something that they're also talking about. So there's a bunch of things that are being floated around right now. We'll know before Monday what they're going to be doing. And so that's the exciting stuff that's happening right now in D.C.
Desiree, you talked about the filibuster when they stop talking. How long is it? Are they timed out? Well, if they stop talking for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, I mean, what's the criteria on that? Do we know that? Do we know the answer to that right now?
I don't think we do. That's a great question. Are you talking about the talking filibuster?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that answer. That's a great question. But I can find out for you and let you know on the next show.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm just wondering if somebody has a stopwatch over there. Okay, he stopped talking. We can vote now. Let's do it.
He started breathing for a second.
Right.
That's a great question. No, I'm sure that there's very nuanced and very precise rules around this. Maybe not. Maybe that's what they need to think through, what that looks
right.
like.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. All right, we got a couple minutes left. I want to talk about the Build Back Better piece of legislation, which also probably will need to revamp the filibuster rules on that. But we still got to get Democrats on board. And one of the key components in there is that tax credit for electric vehicles. And I know Josh Nassar testified yesterday. What did you hear? Any news about the reaction on that? I think it was a $4,500 tax credit. That would be on top of the, $7,500 that is currently given to all EV sales. And this is if you buy a union-made electric vehicle, correct?
Right. So yesterday, Josh Nassar testified before the full committee on the House Agricultural Committee. It was a great hearing. So basically, Josh's message, the UAW's message, was that we need to do more in this country to strengthen auto manufacturing in this country. We need to make sure that, we make sure that workers who want to be in a union have access to a union. And we also want to make sure that, EVs, which are coming undeniably, not only because of policies in this country, also because, automakers are creating business plans where EVs are a part of that plan. So EVs are coming whether we like it or not. So the question is, what does that future look like? And from the UAW's perspective, that future looks like we need to make sure that, one, EVs are made by UAW union members across the country, that they're made in this country, because right now, China and Europe are really dominating the market, China specifically. They're cornering the market on the critical minerals and supplies needed to build these EVs. So we also need to make sure that, we have the strong supply chains in our country for semiconductors. There's a nationwide shortage, a global shortage of these, and that is shutting down plants in several states across the country. So we need to shore up the supply chains as well and make sure that they're here in the United States. And quite frankly, some of those new jobs that are going to be created in those supply chains could be low-row jobs. We need to make sure that they're high-row jobs and that workers have access to unions. So some of the same themes that we always talk about intersect there as well. So Josh was, his testimony was very well received. The key point also, because it's before the Ag Committee, is that this isn't just about building future jobs, electric vehicle jobs in the Midwest. This is about throughout the country in rural communities where people really want to have good jobs. They want to have jobs that, they can have a dignified life and have a good, to provide for their families. And so that's really what we're asking for.
And Desiree, this legislation you talked about, this is in the Build Back Better bill. Is that right?
That's correct. So the EV tax credit that Senator Stabenow and Representative Kildee is in the Build Back Better Act, which stalled out before the holidays. But our sense is that this conversation is still very much alive and that they will bring it up right after voting rights or towards the end of January. So we're still hopeful that this provision will be maintained.
All right. We'll stay on the issue. Desiree, great job. Thank you for joining us. Desiree Hoffman from the United Auto Workers. Well, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, we have the Parkersburg Marietta Building Trades and labor lawyer Joyce Goldstein. Until then, All of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.